It's called Operation Warp Speed. That means big and it means fast.
President Trump pushes for a coronavirus vaccine. It's Monday, May 18th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Instagram and Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a deadly Islamic State attack. Democracy in Asia is under pressure. Americans upset about slow reopenings. California begins to loosen restrictions. A new approach to Ramadan. It's all on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump has announced a decision to send ventilators to India, adding that both countries are cooperating on developing a vaccine for the virus.
We're sending a lot of ventilators to India. I spoke to Prime Minister Modi, and we're sending quite a few ventilators to India. We have a tremendous supply of ventilators.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi on Saturday thanked the United States for the pledge, underlining the importance of nations working together during the coronavirus pandemic. The White House did not specify the number of ventilators that would be sent to India. The U.S. has promised to send ventilators to several countries hit by the virus that has claimed more than 307,000 lives worldwide and infected more than 4.5 million people. President Trump also acknowledged the great Indian-American scientists and researchers who were contributing to the development of a coronavirus vaccine. Last month, India had allowed export of hydroxychloroquine after Trump urged New Delhi to release supplies of the drug seen as a possible treatment for COVID-19 in the United States, where more than 87,500 deaths have been attributed to the virus, with over 1.4 million infected according to Johns Hopkins University data. President Trump, meanwhile, unveiled Operation Warp Speed, an initiative aimed at developing a coronavirus vaccine by the end of the year, although he vowed the country would reopen with or without one. The Trump administration also laid out plans to expand an initiative to ensure the United States does not run out of critical medical supplies. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swarer reports.
U.S. President Donald Trump intends to have hundreds of millions of coronavirus vaccine doses available by January 2021.
It's called Operation Warp Speed. That means big and it means fast.
Most public health experts agree it's an ambitious timeline, but they say it may be possible to have a vaccine ready for emergency use on high-risk groups, such as healthcare workers and the elderly.
Everything would have to go perfectly. I think for the general population, we are really still looking at an 18-month endeavor here if all goes well.
With an election looming in November, Trump is also keeping his eye on reopening the country and its economy.
Vaccine or no vaccine, we're back. And we're starting the process. And in many cases, they don't have vaccines. And a virus or a flu comes, and you fight through it.
Trump has expressed support for protesters who want individual states to lift stay-at-home orders and open their economies, though many do not meet his own administration's criteria to do so. Some include so-called red states that voted for Trump in 2016. Analysts say Trump's support for protesters may hurt him politically if states that reopen too early see a rise in the number of coronavirus cases.
It is a big risk to take, and what we're seeing now with cases emerging in rural areas and in places where Trump has been strongest, the red states and the red parts of blue states, suggest that this could be a gambit that could backfire. God bless the
USA. Earlier this week, Trump also announced plans to ensure the nation has enough supply of medical and emergency gear.
Instead of 1 to 3 weeks worth of supplies, which we had less than that, the U.S. government will now stockpile 3 whole months, much of it made in the USA.
The Trump administration has been criticized by some for the country's lack of personal protective equipment in the early weeks of the pandemic. Replenishing the strategic national stockpile is seen as critical.
It's really important that we do everything we can now to prepare for a fall or winter pandemic wave when we will likely have both flu as well as COVID-19 at the same time.
The administration plans to expand American manufacturing of these medical supplies to reduce reliance on foreign companies and create jobs domestically. Patsy Whitaker-Swarer, VOA News, Washington.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. India extends lockdown for 2 more weeks. Nepal police fire live rounds at Indian farmers trying to cross the border amid lockdown. Afghan President Ghani and rival Abdullah sign power-sharing deal. Thailand malls reopen with temperatures taken, masks worn. For many Cambodians, debt repayment, bigger threat than COVID-19. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The United States says an Islamic State terrorist group is behind deadly attacks against a hospital and funeral service in Afghanistan last week. The U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan Reconciliation says the Islamic State is trying to pit the Taliban and Afghan government against each other. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more.
The attack on the maternity ward of a Kabul hospital killed 24 people, further threatening an already fragile peace process in Afghanistan. No one has claimed responsibility, and the Taliban has denied any involvement. The blast prompted the France-based relief group, Doctors Without Borders, to suspend its operations at the hospital, and it is at a loss about the motive.
We don't know. We don't know. We are still analyzing the whole situation today.
U.S. Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad says he believes the Islamic State committed the horrific attack, saying it's consistent with past patterns. Asked if the terrorist group has coordinated with the Taliban, Khalilzad says the Islamic State and the Taliban are mortal enemies. Khalilzad negotiated and signed the U.S. peacebuilding agreement with the Taliban in February to end the nearly 19-year Afghan war and bring American troops home. But some are skeptical, including U.S. Congressman Michael Waltz, who served in Afghanistan. Waltz says he doesn't believe the Taliban's claim it wasn't involved.
Well, I don't see how the inter-Afghan talks can proceed with this type of violence. I don't know any government that could enter into talks when their security forces, their police forces, their government are being so viciously attacked.
Tuesday's violence prompted Afghan President Ashraf Ghani to order security forces to resume offensive operations against what he termed the Taliban and other terrorist groups. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia News, the clash between China and the United States over COVID-19 has caused a rift between European nations at the UN Security Council over a call for ceasefires in some conflict zones during the pandemic. At the heart of the dispute is Trump's offensive against the World Health Organization, from which he has vowed to cut all U.S. funding. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's a brand new week. We're glad you're starting it with us here on VOA Asia. China is touting its success in curbing the outbreak of COVID-19 that has now spread to the rest of the world. But the so-called success came at a steep price. The state's massive surveillance network now intrudes even further into people's lives, with more crackdowns on speech and more government critics in prison. Beijing argues the hardline measures are necessary, but other countries show they may not be necessary. We hear more in this report written by VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching.
Around the world, many popular landmarks and streets remain empty due to restrictions amid the COVID-19 outbreak. Yet in some places, schools, offices, and restaurants are gradually reopening, including in China, once the world's coronavirus epicenter. U.S. President Donald Trump initially praised Beijing's response to the outbreak, but as the virus spread and more Americans died, Washington accused China of hiding key information about the origins of the coronavirus. China rejects the criticism and points to its support of the World Health Organization in fighting the pandemic. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says this assertion ignores how Beijing continues to undermine the global effort.
We still don't have the samples that we need. We still don't have the access. We collectively, the world, don't have the samples. It's not even just that in the moment they couldn't do the right thing. They continue to be opaque. They continue to deny access for this important information that our research, our epidemiologists need. And importantly, this could happen again.
Beijing insists it is cooperating and being transparent, even though it has not allowed international scientists access to the Wuhan Virology Lab and other places that may have played a role in igniting the pandemic.
For some time, the U.S. government has ignored the facts, diverted public attention, and passed the buck in an attempt to shirk its responsibility for incompetence in the fight against the epidemic. This approach will not erase Chinese people's achievements in the epidemic prevention and control through hard work.
China positions itself as the leader to fight the pandemic, but the achievements to control the coronavirus are not Beijing's alone. Some senior U.S. officials say democratic governments like Taiwan are examples of how authorities can effectively respond without undermining individual rights. Retired Brigadier General Robert Spalding from the Hudson Institute spoke to VOA via Skype.
You know, when you look at the way that they've taken care of their population by providing information and transparency and also acting quickly as a government to implement the kind of controls and protections, Taiwan's actually fared through the virus very well, and they've really given, I think, the world a model.
Taiwan uses air and sea border controls, quickly identifies new cases, notifies others with real-time alerts, and has used funds and military personnel to increase mask production. For its part, China has provided millions of test kits and protective gear for countries battling the virus, diplomatic outreach that some say has been helpful, despite some complaints over faulty equipment. And as vaccine development gets underway, the country expects to be a part of the solution, says Chinese entrepreneur and philanthropist Jack Ma.
In my opinion, the epidemic will not end within a short time, and it can only vanish by relying on technological breakthroughs, innovation, and medical research. So we have to make long-term preparation.
But others say Beijing's aid has not made up for its failures. Bonnie Glazer from CSIS spoke to VOA via Skype.
I think the countries have not forgotten the mishandling by China of the outbreak of the crisis. It's cover-up of doctors within China. It's domination of the World Health Organization. It's failure to share completely transparent information with the rest of the world. So over the longer run, I actually think it's going to have a negative impact on China's reputation.
Now China and other countries are battling a new wave of coronavirus infections, putting their pandemic response systems and their political systems to another test. For Nike Ching, I'm Elizabeth Cherneff for VOA News.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. India on Sunday extended its nearly two-month-old lockdown by 2 weeks after reporting nearly 5,000 new coronavirus cases. After surpassing China on Saturday, India now has the most confirmed virus cases in Asia with nearly 91,000. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, in Michigan last week, protesters gathered at the state capitol to express their frustration with the state's lockdown rules. Such protests have sprouted up around the United States as some people are bucking against what they see as overreaching government control in their lives. Matt Dibble reports.
Open up! Open up! rain didn't stop protesters from showing up at the state capitol in Lansing, Michigan, Thursday to express their frustrations with the state's lockdown orders.
We have a right to make a living. Remember, where did that go? You know, like they can't just tell us we can't go to work anymore. That's our right. That's our right to make a living.
To support the complete opening of Michigan.
Yep.
That's why we're here. This is not a dictatorship.
It's just tyranny that the government's doing. There's just no excuse for it. They're trying to equate this thing with the bubonic plague or tuberculosis. It's a problem to be sure, but the cure is worse than the disease.
Protests like these are popping up here and there in cities and towns across the United States. They are part of an effort to push governments to open the economy. But they also bring together a mix of causes: gun rights, anti-vaccination, anti-government but pro-Trump administration, who have seized the moment to further their agendas.
I think the government's role should be assisting, not controlling. So what we've clearly seen is the government taking a very controlling stance.
This is a total power grab. This is the biggest wealth transfer this world has ever seen.
And half these deaths aren't even real. I mean, I get people are dying, but half these deaths are not even real.
Many cast the government restrictions as a curtailment on their liberty and express their mistrust with information they hear about the virus. These messages have been amplified by well-funded right-wing groups who are supporting the protesters in various ways, says Lisa Graves, who studies political movements.
One is by providing them, basically urging them to do the protests and providing them guidance on optics, on how to make the protest look for the press, for press coverage. Another thing that we're seeing is the creation of social media sites or websites to help organize the people to advance these protests, to make them into a sort of a longer-term political operation to advance their agenda. They have really been something that people can't stop watching because it's just so shocking to many people to see people coming out armed to their state capitals. They've gotten, I think, in some ways, a disproportionate amount of coverage based on the fact that most Americans, the overwhelming majority of Americans, believe we need to have these measures in place to protect our lives and the lives of people we love.
Counter-protesters have also attended the events, most notably healthcare workers wearing face masks. John Rose felt compelled to attend Thursday's rally because he was upset about seeing guns in the Capitol.
I am not against gun rights, but there's no reason for it.
For some people, though, protesting is simply a way of being heard, standing up for the economic pain felt by many.
I am here particularly for the small business owners that are struggling right now and for the people that are forced to be unemployed and struggling to feed their families right now.
There are signs that the protests are having some effect. This week, the Wisconsin Supreme Court threw out that state's stay-at-home order, siding with Republican lawmakers in a dispute with the Democratic governor. For VOA News, Matt Dibble.
Are my pets safe from coronavirus? There's no current evidence that cats and dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the state of California is allowing some businesses to reopen, slowly and in phases. People are learning how to adjust to the new reality, considering at least 70,000 people have tested positive for COVID-19 in California, and close to 3,000 people have died. Angelina Bagsarian has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Throughout the state, California's Governor Gavin Newsom is allowing flower and bookstores and a number of parks and golf clubs to reopen, but nothing is going completely back to normal yet. For businesses, orders must be made online or by phone and picked up on the curb. Still, though, welcomed news.
Last four or five weeks, I lose money because I can't sell my flowers. We can't stop the flowers. You know what I mean? The flowers coming, you need cutting out.
This Los Angeles farmers market is opened with restrictions. For starters, no one can cross this yellow tape.
No one can touch the produce unless they're buying it. We're handling it for self, and for a team, we have like someone to handle the produce, and I handle the money, and everybody just needs to keep the 6 feet distance.
There are fewer people here. That is one of the reasons some stores that now could be open are staying closed.
The big issue is, even if retailers open, are people ready to go shopping? And I think that the jury's still out on that. We just don't know.
Xenia Bay's nail salon has been closed since mid-March. She can pay rent later and received government financial help, but Xenia says it won't be enough. When she can reopen in June, mandatory safety restrictions could kill off her business.
We are designed to serve 14 clients at a time, but supposedly when we're allowed to reopen, we'll have to cut that number in half, and that's unprofitable for us. We have 5 pedicure chairs that have less than 6 feet between them, so I can only use 3. With a larger rent I need to pay, the salon just won't survive.
But for the critics, Governor Newsom points out where the coronavirus outbreak in his state started.
This whole thing started in the state of California, the first community spread, in a nail salon.
State authorities are trying to take advantage of this unusual time to do renovation work. The famous Santa Monica Pier, that is normally swarmed with people, is going through some long-needed repairs. Frangelina Bagdasaran in Los Angeles, NRIs, VOA News.
The COVID-19 pandemic has forced many into changing their way of life and routines. Muslim communities in the United States who are observing the holy month of Ramadan must too adapt to this new norm. Ariadne Budianto narrates this report by VOA's Yuni Salim.
You're inside Ar-Rahmah Mosque. Every evening around 7 to 7:30 p.m., we distribute food. Recipients picked it up in their cars. The mosque youths distributed the packets. For older recipients who are unable to come and pick up the food in person, we will deliver to their homes with our van.
During this Muslim holy month of Ramadan, Ar-Rahmah Mosque in Redmond, Washington, distributes 150 food packages to the community, according to its imam, Indonesian-born Muhammad Joban. The mosque was established in 2006 by the Muslim Association of Puget Sound, the largest Muslim community in the state of Washington. Every Ramadan, Ar-Rahmah hosts iftar meals eaten by Muslims after sunset. They normally serve 300 people during weekdays and up to 1,000 people on weekends. Using drive-through methods, mosques across the nation continue to hold iftars and food distributions, even as they close their doors for communal prayers and activities. Take Darul Hijrah Islamic Center in Falls Church, Virginia. The mosque serves as a donation hub for those who want to help and fulfill their religious obligations. The money received, mostly through online donations, is used to purchase the distributed food.
And obviously, you know, Ramadan is the month where Muslims are much more generous than the other months. And because not only that there are many, many rewards for giving charity in Ramadan, but also that was how the Prophet, peace be upon him, used to do.
Before the pandemic, Darul Hijrah Mosque served Ramadan iftars to approximately 800 people on weekdays and up to 1,500 people on weekends. This year, they're serving 300 to 600 people with their drive-through program, which is administered with social distancing rules. There are also separate charity funds to help the needy during Ramadan to pay rent and utilities, since millions of people, including Muslims, are out of work. For Yuni Salim in Falls Church, Virginia, I'm Ariadna Budianto, VOA.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia and see us on YouTube. You'll also find us on Instagram as well. We thank you for joining us, and we thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team, including Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Popelboom. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.